Welcome to Earshot. David Rutledge here with more of our features and stories from here, there and everywhere, but especially with a Japanese focus at the moment as we remember the Japanese surrender in the Pacific 70 years ago. Japan's special attack forces of World War II were commonly known as the kamikaze. They were essentially state-sponsored suicide bombers, their mission being to fly their planes laden with explosives into the sides of enemy targets. Just a autobiographical digression, I worked as an English teacher in Tokyo a few years ago, and one of my students was Mr. Suzuki, who was very elderly, and he'd been a kamikaze pilot during the war. He still had the cigarette that he said had been personally handed to him by the Emperor prior to his final mission. The mission was called off, and so he lived to tell the tale, and to show off his cigarette, he was very proud of it. But not all kamikaze pilots who survived the war were like Suzuki-san. Many were too ashamed to speak about their experiences, and perhaps in response to that shame, a lot of myth-making about the noble kamikaze spirit began to accrete like barnacles around the Japanese national memory. So there's a lot of tension among Japanese today between that shame and that pride. For many, such as radio producer Masako Fukui, whose father trained to be a kamikaze pilot, the myths of noble kamikaze spirit have given rise to more questions than answers. This is Kamikaze Daughter.
Roger, Bridge. Enemy contact range approximately 3 miles, bearing 095. Position angle 15, crossing left to right.
My father was a kamikaze pilot. I like telling people that. It makes my dad seem so courageous, so heroic. My father never talked about the war, though. He told me once I wouldn't understand because I'm a girl. And he stressed that he was only in training to be a pilot at Yokaren, the junior aviator training program of the Imperial Japanese Navy. The majority of kamikaze pilots were yokaren, many still teenagers. My father became a trainee just before his 16th birthday, in April 1945. The war ended in August, so he never completed his training. Had the war dragged on, though, my father almost certainly would have died in the Divine Wind Special Attack Forces.
According to legend, powerful typhoons blew back Mongol invaders to Japan in the 13th century. Believed to have been sent by the gods to protect the Japanese people, these winds came to be known as the Divine Wind, the Kamikaze.
My father died a few years ago, and as his memoirs say very little about his Yokaren days, I'm still curious to know just what place the kamikaze have in Japanese history. Were they brainwashed, brave, or barbarians? I'm hoping to find some answers by visiting memorials and talking to an ex-kamikaze pilot.
Do not run up or down the escalator. You may harm yourself and
my first stop is the Yokaren Museum in Oita City. It's a private museum that Kiichi Kawano built in the basement of his home. Kawano-san is a former pilot of the Special Attack Forces, the official term for the kamikaze. The museum's tiny, a bit musty, packed with military memorabilia, photos, documents, and newspaper clippings. I tell Kawano-san that my dad was in the 15th Aviator Trainee Program. Well, according to his memoirs, that is. But memory can be an unreliable source of history, though 89-year-old Kawano-san clearly remembers the day he joined the Yokaren.
In 2017, ほいで本当は操縦したくて入ったんですけど、残念ながら偵察の方に。
I joined the Yokkaden on June 1st, 1942. I was 16 years old. I really wanted to be an aviator in the fighter squadron. But unfortunately, I was chosen to be a navigator instead. And after graduation, I became an assistant flight instructor.
その助教をしとる時代に講義の人をですね、だいぶ治療を殴りました、これで。
え、
こういうので。
そんな。
これ海軍精神注入棒、海軍の予科練はもう全部これ殴られてますよ。
As an instructor, I got to wield this truncheon. This is called the truncheon to instill the military spirit. Every trainee received a regular bashing with this bat. I was bashed many times too when I was a trainee. All it took was for one person in your unit to step out of line for everyone to be disciplined. I would whack them on the soft part of the behind, usually about 3 to 5 times. This bat was considered to be fundamental to the molding of the Japanese soldier.
My father wrote that his biggest fear during his Yokkaden days was being bashed by this truncheon. Perhaps it's because I'm a girl, but the idea that vicious corporal punishment can somehow instill values like courage and loyalty seems unnecessarily ruthless to me. Many observers claim this idea comes from Bushido, or the code of the samurai. I asked Dr. Yuki Tanaka, historian and author, to explain this link between Bushido and the kamikaze.
Well, the myth comes from the Japanese military code, which has a very strong elements of Bushido. You never surrender to your enemy, that kind of thing. But when you look at the kamikaze pilots, they are not really brainwashed by Bushido at all. Of course, they were educated with a very strong emphasis of the emperor ideology. But as far as the kamikaze pilot is concerned, they have very little sense of nationalism. In the final years, the cadets clearly understood that Japan would lose the war. Therefore, they had to rationalize their own deaths in order to believe that their sacrifice would not be a total waste. To this end, some convinced themselves that their determination to fight to the end would save the Japanese people and their country.
So it wasn't about dying for the emperor, which is often how they're portrayed.
Their loyalty to the emperor emerges as a logical extension of loyalty to parents and hometown rather than the reverse. To defend one's mother in one's hometown was therefore the most basic, almost instinctive element in rationalizing a cadet's death as a kamikaze pilot.
それでここにこういう出発する前に写真撮ったらこういう笑顔が出るんだ。今から死ぬんですよ。死ぬのに笑顔が出るんだ。
Here's a typical photo of pilots, taken just before they're about to go on their special attack mission. And they're all smiling. They're about to die. But see how they have huge smiles. It's not that they were happy to die, but they knew that by dying, their families, their country would be saved. And they're smiling because they know that after death, they will become gods.
Japanese military leaders' decision to emphasize this suicide kamikaze attack was a desperate strategy whose only possible meaning was to convince the US and its allies to ease surrender terms and prevent a US landing in Japan. However, the actual damage to the Allied battleship that kamikaze attacks caused was minimal. The average success rate was mere 18.6%. In other words, most of these young kamikaze pilots' lives were wasted, totally wasted. It can be said, therefore, that kamikaze attack was desperate but crazy strategy.
Historian Yuki Tanaka.
On July 25th, 1945, my unit also became a special attack unit. I didn't desire to go, but we had to follow orders. Most of my unit died. Some are only 19 years old.
That the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base. On August 15th, 1945, at noon, an announcement from the emperor to the Japanese people was broadcast. The emperor said that in order to prevent any more Japanese casualties, he had accepted the terms of the Potsdam Declaration. The war was over. I was meant to fly out the next day, so that's why I survived. I've been asked many, many times how I felt then. I have to say, I felt like I failed to die. It was like coming second in a race. I was so disappointed and ashamed. I didn't want to survive. But the gods had allowed me to live. I had to think long and hard about what that meant. I understood that I needed to do something to honor the spirits of my fellow pilots. That's why I built this museum. That was 30 years ago. This is my way of comforting their souls and to tell people who visit here, especially young people, the truth. War is about killing people, you see. And it should never happen again. That's essentially my message. Now I feel glad that I survived.
帝国隊の成果を発揚し、世界の支援に遅れざらんことを期すべし、汝人民それ抑鎮が用を大事せよ。For the defeated Japanese, guilt, shame, and fear of the Allied occupation forces meant that praising the war dead as heroes seemed almost obscene. Despite being victims of a disastrous military strategy, the men of the Special Attack Forces went from being noble to a source of national shame virtually overnight. Many historians claim that post-war Japan couldn't honor the kamikaze in any meaningful way because Japan never had a chance to admit its mistakes. The reasons why are complex. But historian Yuki Tanaka suggests one view, that Emperor Hirohito encouraged the reimagining of Japan as the ultimate victim martyr of the atomic bomb, allowing Japan to deflect its responsibility for its actions in the Asia-Pacific.
Well, the emperor actually avoided his own responsibility, claiming that because of the incredibly powerful nuclear weapon, we had to surrender. But he said at the same time he was sorry for the Asian neighboring nations who supported the Japanese imperial forces to fight against the imperialism of the Western nations. By saying that, he's totally ignored the Japanese war responsibility.
We have used it in order to shorten the agony of war, in order to save the lives of thousands and thousands of young Americans. We shall continue to use it until we completely destroy Japan's power to make war.
And Americans also exploited the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki because they claimed that nuclear weapons actually ended the war by saying that they justified the use of nuclear weapon, which is clearly a serious crime against humanity. So this is the collaboration between the Japanese and American government, in my view. And by doing that, the Japanese lost opportunity to clearly self-examine how badly we behaved in war and how many people we killed, sacrificed, including large number of civilians.
My mother's cousin was also a special attack pilot. Like Kawano-san, he survived because the war ended before he was deployed. I wonder what it must have been like to willingly lean into death, only to have that momentum thwarted by the Emperor's surrender. The Japanese now pay their respects to dead kamikaze at the famous Yasukuni Shrine in Tokyo. I'm heading there now. Yasukuni Shrine has a bit of a public relations problem outside Japan. Of the 2.5 million souls enshrined here, about 1,000 are convicted war criminals and 14 are Class A war criminals. So visiting Yasukuni can have political implications. But the shrine's promotional video emphasizes Yasukuni is about peace and is where those who died in conflicts come to rest eternally as divine or sacred spirits.
The sound of big drums echoes through the forest of Kudan in Tokyo. Yasukuni means a peaceful nation in Japanese. As the name suggests, Yasukuni Jinja was established.
As far as the Yasukuni Shrine is concerned, the soldiers enshrined as Yasukunis are regarded as a sacred sacrifice of the war for the nation. When a man is seen as a sacred sacrifice, one should not or could not question what sort of atrocities or absurd behavior he engaged in, because he's sacred. Therefore, one should not ask why these men were mobilized for the war either. In other words, we should not question the government's war's responsibility. In this way, they can avoid very basic and fundamental questions why these men were sent for the war.
The Yushukan stores mementos such as wills and articles left by the enshrined and are on display to remember their honourable deeds.
Attached to Yasukuni Shrine is the war museum called Yushukan. The history shown here presents Japan as the benevolent protector of Asia against Western imperialist advances rather than Japan as aggressor. I'm in the room dedicated to the special attack forces, and here are a number of exquisite dolls dressed as brides displayed in glass cases. These are offerings made to comfort the souls of men who died so young they never had the opportunity to get married. If that won't make you weep, then the final letters to their mothers might.
3月26日 花爽やかに開く日お父さんお母さん
Father, Mother, I am about to fly out on my mission. I did not ever think that I would depart this world before you. Mother, perhaps it's difficult to ask you not to cry, but please see my death as an honorable one. After all, my death is for my country, for my home.
祖国を守るために死んでいくのですから。
Reading letters, I mean, I must say I cried so many times, but simply reading these documents does not naturally or inevitably give rise to strong anti-war sentiment. The typical format is that of a young boy being forced to die on a suicidal mission, yet overcoming his fear of death as an expression of love for his mother or girlfriend. That's true. But, you know, this is highly romanticized, and it was a projection of this romanticized image that led these men to be seen as war heroes while leaving intact official narratives concerning the war. Now, for this reason, the feature films of kamikaze pilots are extremely popular in Japan.
So on that notion of the overwhelming sentimentality of these movies, Eien no Zero, or Eternal Zero as it's called in English. Now, I've seen that film a number of times, and I do cry every single time I watch it.
Yes.
And yes, you know, it's a tearjerker, but you are so moved by these people's personal stories.
The underlying message subconsciously cultivates the idea of hegemonistic masculinity, that men are actively engaged in dominating others and women should passively accept such behavior as natural. The presentation of the stories of these young kamikaze pilots can be politically exploited to enhance war-inspired patriotism. So in order to raise anti-war sentiment, it would be vital to provide accurate historical background information on how and why Japan waged wars and how such an inhumane tactics as suicide attacks was adopted and wasting the lives of thousands of
youth.
As 89-year-old Kawano-san sang this requiem to his fellow pilots, I spoke to 18-year-old Kazuki Ando, who I met at Kawano-san's private museum. When I asked young Kazuki whether he could go on a kamikaze mission, he said he didn't know. Surely we know by now how insane the kamikaze strategy was. Shouldn't all young people be saying a defiant no to suicide missions?
It's 8:52 here in New York. I'm Bryant Gumbel. We understand that there has been a plane crash on the southern tip of Manhattan.
Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country.
When those planes flew into the buildings in America and caused so many casualties, some media reports claimed that the attack was the same as the Japanese kamikaze attacks. I cried when I heard that. Of course, the two cases are completely different. One was attacking civilians. I was so angry and upset that people misunderstood and made this comparison.
Kamikaze pilots' targets were always military planes, ships and personnel, never civilians. Nevertheless, there seems to be some fundamental similarities between the two groups of suicide attackers. The goal for Palestinian suicide bombers, for example, is to shake the foundation of the Israelis' establishment by destroying its sense of security. The same logic applies to September 11 bombing. For kamikaze pilots, too, the ultimate aim was not to kill enemy soldiers, but to force the Allies to make concessions to end the war by terrorizing them with suicidal attack. In both cases, The concrete images of the victims may be lacking in the attacker's mind. Thus, the actions of killing others becomes ritualized.
There is a ritualistic aspect to all suicide attacks. So what if we refuse to give these rituals any meaning? After all, isn't part of the problem that suicide attacks are imbued with such potent meanings like patriotism, honour, revenge, martyrdom, glory? But does that still make my dad a hero? So, you know, in terms of honouring my father, what would you suggest I do?
Producing this kind of program is to honour your father, don't you think?
I think so.
Yes. I mean, that's exactly what you're doing is to honour your father, because you were trying to give a real picture of the kamikaze pilot and how they thought about it, how the war responsibility was avoided by the political leaders. You know, the analysis is to honour not just kamikaze pilot, but all soldiers who died in war.
My dad was a hero, not because he was willing to die for his family, but because he lived for his family. This program is dedicated to all Yokaren, including my father.
On RN, you've been listening to Kamikaze Daughter, written and produced by Masako Fukui, and the sound engineer was Stephen Tilley. Special thanks to Koji and Takayasu Kawano, and for more information about the program, check out the website abc.net.au/RN. We are Earshot, I'm David Rutledge, and you'll find us on the program menu.